Chapter 13. As impossible as it seemed, the reality of Quell's sudden disappearance was easy enough to confirm. Oyun contacted Clariana, and they verified the planet's startling absence. The research crew aboard the command ship hadn't noted it immediately, since all their attention had been turned to Quell's shadow, and it took an hour or so to convince them that it wasn't a problem with their sensors. But that was a short time to wait to learn that what Elith had feared had indeed come to pass. Quell had vanished without a trace, destroyed by some unimaginable power and design from within the heart of its shadow. The team of six had gathered in Oyun's research station, though none of them really knew what to do other than stand around in shocked silence, half listening to the Arbiter's one-sided communication with Clariana. He sat at his workstation, half a dozen displays open before him and covered with a combination of star charts, orbital imagery, and dense mathematical equations so advanced that it might as well have been some ancient arcane language to Elith. "The result of their interaction?" Oyun asked. "Something like a matter-antimatter reaction?" Korush was the only one among them who didn't seem dazed by the change in circumstance. He was alert as ever, keeping watch over the group. And, Elith noticed, paying particular attention to Baron. "Did you detect any sort of signature at all? Well, that may be something. Don't discard it. An event of that magnitude would surely have some measurable impact. Perhaps it will make sense later." "No, we didn't notice anything change here," the Arbiter said before correcting himself. "I should say that half of us didn't, at least. Varen and our friends from the house seem to have detected the event as it occurred. Some sensitivity to the discharge, as I understand it." "Not that I understand it. I'll gather more data from them when we have time."
"I need some air," Varen said quietly. "Elith, care to join me?"
Elith's initial thought was to say no. There was no telling what she might learn from listening to Oyun work through the problem in real time. But when she looked over to Varen to decline the invitation, his expression told her he had something he wanted to discuss with her.
"Sure, yeah, okay," she answered. "Might help to clear my head a bit."
He held out a hand, inviting her to lead the way. Nieta and Ames both glanced at them as they moved toward the door, but neither seemed to have any intent to join them. Korush, on the other hand, silently rose and trailed along behind. Elith opened the door and stepped out into the mild night air. Subo was there a few feet from the entrance, facing outward, their patient and vigilant night watch. Varen paused at the top of the short staircase and turned to address the Azirim.
"Wari Korush," he said, "I don't suppose you would give us the honor of trusting us to be out here together without an escort."
Korush didn't say anything, but his look was answer enough. "What harm could we possibly cause that would be worse than what's already happened?"
"I don't care to find out," Korush replied. His eyes flicked to Elith's and then back to Varen.
"But if it's a private conversation, I will allow you some space."
"Thank you. That's very gracious."
Varen trotted down the steps and drew Elith alongside him, leading her 30 feet or so from the Azirim, well out of the weak pool of illumination cast by the single sunset-hued light over the entrance of the research station. Korush remained on the top step there, watching them like a hawk eyeing a pair of field mice. Subo hadn't moved, but Elith knew the machine was also keeping track of them. For a time, Varen said nothing. They stood there together for a minute. Then he sat on the ground and leaned back with his hands behind him, gazing up at the sky, intent as though counting the stars. Elith continued to stand a while longer, waiting for him to start whatever conversation he'd been wanting to have. When he didn't, she took the initiative.
What's on your mind, Grief? He glanced at her, his eyes barely visible in the night.
Many things, he said. Too many.
Will you sit with me?
Elith was anxious to return to the station, knowing she was missing valuable details from Oyun's work. But Varen's demeanor had shifted, lost its usual lightness, and she sensed how troubled he was in heart and mind. She glanced over at Karush, whose eyes were still fixed on them, and then joined Varen on the ground, cross-legged, hands folded in her lap. He remained quiet for a span, but just before Elith prompted him again, he said,
I can't believe it's gone.
And in those few words, his voice carried a deep, weighty sorrow, a sadness she'd never heard from him before, even in their darkest time together on Quell. It was a grief too powerful for Elith to speak to. She waited in silence, knowing more would come in its time.
Such a beautiful world, he continued eventually. So full of life. Vibrant. Still so much to give.
You tended it well, she offered. He grunted at the comment.
I appreciate the thought, he said, but it's not that.
Quell had so much potential,
and it wasn't realized yet. It was only just beginning to blossom.
You saved it once, Elith said. Beyond all hope, you stood as its sole protector and rescued it. You gave it more time than it would have had otherwise.
Not sole protector. I couldn't have done what you did. I never would have even thought to try. And I couldn't have done it without you.
He turned and looked at her in the darkness, his sorrow briefly tempered by her presence.
Do you think? He said,
then sat forward, shifted his gaze to the ground in front of him, and shook his head.
I've been wondering.
She waited for him to continue, but probably for the first time in his life, he seemed genuinely not to know what to say.
Now you're starting to worry me,
Elith said. Is this the first time you've ever been speechless? He chuckled.
Not the first time, no, but perhaps the first to be afraid of what I might say.
Nothing you can say is going to make me think any less of you, Grief.
Low bar, huh? Can't go any lower?
Just spit it out.
I don't think it's the kind of thing to spit, he said. But look, after we made it off Quell, that first little while I spent with the Hezra was, notably uncomfortable. I was alone a lot, almost all the time. And the one bright hope I had, the one that kept me from feeling like I'd failed completely and was at the end of my journey, came from knowing that you were out there somewhere, and a confidence that I'd see you again one day.
Elith felt the warmth of his words and the discomfort it created within her. He seemed to be waiting for a response from her, but she had no idea what he was expecting to hear.
That's very kind of you to say.
I don't know that it's kind, necessarily, he said, playing off the moment. I just felt sure we'd run into each other at some point. And I thought maybe when we did, maybe I wouldn't let them separate us again. That maybe I wouldn't let anything separate us again. Unless you had different plans, of course.
This wasn't the direction Elith had thought the conversation was going to go, and she wasn't prepared for it. They were sitting on a planet that could apparently eat other ones. It didn't seem like the time or place to discuss something as inconsequential as a relationship. And though she wanted to tell herself that it was the inappropriate timing that created her discomfort, she knew there was something else beneath it. Daughters of the First House spent years learning to know themselves, learning how to detect self-deception and the importance of confronting it. The underlying truth was that when she had committed her life to the First House of the Ascendants, she had closed off any paths that might otherwise tempt her to consider a life away from it, especially a life bound to another.
But hearing his words, an ember flickered in what she thought was the dead ash of that part of her heart, and that was not something she knew how to cope with.
"Grief, I," she said, "I can't even imagine what will come tomorrow, let alone what a future beyond that might hold."
"Oh, sure, I understand," he replied. "But if you could imagine it, do you think you could imagine it with me?"
Elith had said enough. Anything further she might say would only harm more than help. After a few moments of her silence, he nodded, and she saw a deep sorrow wash over him. But he quickly smiled and shook his head, as though he'd harbored no great hope for any particular outcome.
"I'm sorry to put that on you," he said. "I got a little ahead of myself there. Honestly, I'm not sure what's going to happen either, and I wanted you to know that. For whatever it's worth, I would hate to get explosively disassembled, leaving that unsaid."
She felt him withdrawing, masking the second hurt he'd suffered in such a short time.
"I do hope at least," he said,
leaning back on his hands again and looking up at the sky, "that you and I can stand together on Quell one more time."
Elith glanced at him, confused.
"Quell was destroyed, Grief," she said. "You just said so yourself."
"No, I said it was gone, not destroyed."
"It vanished in a moment."
"It would certainly appear that way, yes. But I don't think it was destroyed."
"What do you mean?"
"I don't know exactly. I'm not sure I know much of anything, really. But there are certain things to which I am deeply bonded. Certain things, certain people, Elith, who are bound to me. Or more likely, I to them."
He turned to look deeply into her eyes for a moment, ensuring she understood that he wasn't just talking about Quell. But he didn't linger on the point long and resumed gazing at the stars above.
"Whatever it is, somehow that connection gives me a sense of them, no matter how far away they may be. If Quell had truly been destroyed, I would have felt it."
"It isn't there anymore," she said. "We've confirmed every way we know how. What else could have happened to it?"
He shook his head. "Hidden, maybe? Or transformed?"
"Neither of those seems more likely than outright destruction.
You felt the power this place unleashed. In the face of that, is anything less likely than any other thing?"
Elith drew a breath to argue, but realized it was pointless. Varen was convinced of something that he'd not fully expressed, and there was nothing she could say to move him. And, if she were being honest, his statement had some validity. Anything that could be, no matter how minuscule the probability, could be manifested with sufficient knowledge and control over the deep language.
"You feel the struggle in it, though, don't you? Whatever this planet is, it's at war with itself."
He glanced at her briefly.
"I know if I said it to anyone else, it would sound crazy, but I think you, of all people, can understand it."
"Even saying it to me still sounds crazy."
"Help me understand it, Elith."
"I am trying, Grief," she said, "but I'm not confident we're seeing the same thing."
"I think maybe Quell got into it somehow. That, I don't know, this isn't right, but sort of like Quell was singing into it? The way I sang into Quell? And that whatever just happened wasn't the catastrophe it appears to be."
"There were over 1 billion people on that planet."
"1 billion people the Ascendance was ready to eradicate not so long ago," Varen countered, "and would have, had we not been there to prevent it."
The shift was subtle, but uncomfortable. Varen was defending the bizarre world, despite the obvious threat it posed. And Elith was reminded of her first impression of the man, of his willingness to initiate change recklessly, without regard to its potential consequences, somehow trusting that wherever the new course led would turn out for the better. He hadn't really changed at all.
What are you talking about? What do you think we're here to do?
He shook his head. I don't know, Eleth. I just have a sense that if we spend enough time, if I could connect myself to the heart of this planet, we might learn to capture things we currently find inexpressible.
Truths that can't be spoken? She asked, recalling his own words from an early conversation on Quell, a reminder of who he'd claimed to be as Eth Amuin, the Silent One. I think it's more likely this planet will get into your heart, and I shudder to think what change that might bring.
He sat quietly for a span, but then nodded and levered up to standing. He dusted off his pants, then offered her his hand.
You had to dust your pants off before you helped me up? She asked, hoping to melt the frost she'd sensed was beginning to form between them.
These hands haven't been clean in a long, long time, he said, and though the tone was light, there was a darkness lurking beneath that she hadn't seen in some time.
She took his hand, and he helped her to her feet.
They stood together, hands joined longer than necessary.
Grief, Eleth said. I know how much Quell meant to you.
To us.
It's okay to grieve its loss. If you aren't sure how, I can teach you.
The offer was genuine. In her time in service to the house, she'd taken the lives of a dozen planets, each one a world she'd come to know intimately and learned to love. Advocates of the Voice carried the heaviest of burdens, and the First House had a long and thorough process to shepherd them through the guilt, grief, and regret that came with every sentence of death carried out.
Thank you, he said, then released her hand. But I don't feel the need to grieve a thing only temporarily lost.
He smiled at her sadly, his face shadowed in the night, an expression plain to her only because of how well she knew him. And she felt that somehow she'd caused him greater pain than the loss of his beloved world could have. Varen turned and started toward his quarters, apparently with no intention of joining the others in Oyun's station. Watching him go, a thought occurred to Eleth.
Grief, she called. Hold on a second.
She jogged over to her own quarters and pulled out her pack, where she'd stored all her belongings that weren't necessary for her fieldwork. The only belongings she had left now. Deep in an interior pocket was a small, hard shell case. She removed it, opened it, drew out one of the dozen thumb-size vials within. Once she'd closed and returned the case to its proper place, she rejoined Varen outside. He was still patiently waiting right where she'd left him.
I've had this a long time, she said, but maybe now it'll be more use to you.
She handed him the vial, and he left it on his open palm, face close as he studied it.
Okay, he said. Thanks.
What is it?
It's soil, she said, from Quell.
He looked up at her then.
A tradition I had, she explained, before I, put a planet down. I always took some of its earth away before I spoke its death, so I could remember what it had been before I'd come to it.
Varen looked down at the small vial with a new appreciation, understanding now what it was that he held, the tiniest sliver of Quell's unique essence, the only sliver remaining, as far as she knew.
Thank you, Eleth, he said, sincerely now. Maybe one day we can return it to its home.
He wasn't going to let it go, and in his usual way, he was going to keep subtly hinting and poking either until she came around to his point of view, or...
She didn't know what the other option was. It seemed likely that was the only outcome that would make him stop. She was about to jab him with a verbal barb, but the words died in her throat. Before she could speak, another surge of power began to rise through the ground beneath her. This one was faster, though, building in intensity at an exponential rate. It was obvious Varen felt it too. He grabbed her upper arm, offering comfort and stability, or maybe seeking them from her. Common natural instinct would have been to stand in fear and brace herself for the worst. But Elith's life of demanding study and disciplined training had forged her nature in uncommon fire. Though the fear still rose, this time it triggered a different reaction, calling attention to the opportunity that the dreadful moment presented to her. She pulled away from Varen's grasp and dropped to one knee, placed her hand on the ground, pressed fingertips and palm into the soil underneath. To kill a planet, she'd been taught the intricate and exacting technique known as revealing the silent gate. And though she lacked the intimate understanding of Quell's shadow that the technique demanded, in her exile, Elith had carefully extracted a portion of the protocol for different ends. With the power of the planet growing beneath her, she closed her eyes, inhaled deeply, held the breath, emptied her mind of all but the sealing phrase she herself had created. And in her exhale, she spoke. A voice in the void. Its song echoes in emptiness. Her first encounter with the shadow's power had plunged her into a raging river, throwing and throttling her in its rush along its course. But this time, she voluntarily immersed her hand in that surge and tumble, finely attuned and firmly anchored by the deep language. Elith explored the strength of the flow, its texture and substance. Again, she felt within it the underlying structure of cosmic interaction, but not through any means she could grasp or comprehend. Even so, in the midst of that swirling mystery lay some trace of something familiar, too vague for her conscious mind to identify, too present for her subconscious to ignore, too deeply disrupted by the foreign energy to hold in thought. No, not one, she realized, but two separate traces, a wind and a whisper. The electric energy stacked upon itself for a full minute, and then without warning, the surge reversed its course, rapidly depleting at the same rate as it had grown, and Elith lost contact with its stream. There was no sudden release this time, and the lack of an obvious discharge of power gave her some mild hope that nothing had happened after all. But when she opened her eyes, that hope lasted no more than a second. Varen stood next to her, staring up. Above them, the sky had changed once more. This time, however, it didn't take a keen eye to notice what was different. The entire expanse of stars had rearranged itself, as though the planet had flipped upside down or flopped over to some new radical angle. The spread of stars was still separated from a wide swathe of emptiness, but the ratio of pinpoint lights to darkness didn't seem quite the same. The band of blank sky was narrower. The stars claimed a greater share of the heavens. Elith jogged toward the research center with Varen trailing behind. When Kurush saw her coming, he opened the door and stepped aside. Though his face was as stone as ever, his eyes showed that the change in the sky had shaken him in a way Elith would have thought impossible. Inside, the others were stirred up as well. Oyun was fiddling with the gear at his workstation, muttering to himself. "What's going on?" Elith asked. "Dunno," Ames answered. "Lost contact with Clariana all of a sudden. Nyeda felt more of, whatever that was you guys felt before. Looks like it fried our gear." "Hmm," Oyun said. "Something is certainly wrong here."
"What is?"
Nyeda asked. Oyun looked up from his display, brow creased and eyes narrowed in thought. "Well, my array is attempting to recalculate our location, and it's having a bit of difficulty." "Like I said," Ames said, looking at Elith with a half-shrug. Fried, Olagir.
Perhaps, the Arbiter replied, but it was clear his expansive mind was considering other possibilities.
Well, Ames asked, what else could it be besides a busted array?
Yes, yes, that would certainly be the most plausible explanation.
Then why do you make it sound like it's not the right one?
I suppose I'm not confident we are in a known location.
Look, man, Ames said, I haven't slept in like 60 hours or something, so maybe I'm even slower on the uptake than usual, but I'm pretty sure I didn't hear you right.
The Arbiter turned away from his workstation and addressed the captain calmly and patiently, like a kind doctor walking a patient through a troubling diagnosis.
I apologize, I should be clearer, Oyun said. The array is recalculating our location. It did so once, and I've asked it to do so again. Actually, this is the third time. The array seems to be functioning perfectly well, as is our communications network. So, to use the technical term, our gear is not fried.
Then why'd we lose contact with Clariana? Nieta asked. It wasn't destroyed, was it?
One of the consoles at Oyun's station chimed, and he looked to it, read the data scrolling by on its display.
I don't know the vessel's fate, but our communications network has a maximum effective range of about a third of a light second, the Arbiter answered. He turned back to face the rest of them before breaking the news. And it appears that we are now 24 light years away.
Chapter 14. The news was so shocking, so bewildering, that even Karush reacted sharply, a level of confusion and dismay on his face that finally revealed the human beneath the iron mask of Aziri discipline.
Arbiter, he said, and though his voice was even, Elith could hear the dryness of his mouth in the words, please explain.
Oh, I have no way to do that, Wari Karush, Oyun replied, other than to describe what I've already told you. The array contains a full model of our galaxy and orients based on the bodies around it. Planets, stars, nebulae, those sorts of things. Calculated and confirmed by performing the necessary transforms, of course, to match what it sees.
He blinked and seemed to realize that none of the words he was using meant much to his audience. It's like a fancy star map.
The Arbiter reached over to his workstation and pulled one of the floating displays closer, expanded it so everyone else could see it clearly. It did indeed look like a complex star chart, and as he traced his finger over its surface, labels appeared, identifying the celestial body beneath.
Soru 0104, he said, more familiarly called Avamar. That's the closest planet.
He traced farther to a bright star. And its gracious host? I doubt the technical name means anything to you, though now that I think about it, I can't recall the colloquial name either.
You're sure this is accurate, Arbiter? Elith said.
I'm rarely certain of anything, Aspirant, he replied. But at the moment, this is the only thing I feel strong confidence about.
You're telling us that this planet just instantaneously jumped 24 light years across the galaxy?
Nieta said.
Or was pulled, perhaps. Or the galaxy shifted, and it stayed put. But however we got here, it does appear to be the case that we are some distance removed, yes.
That makes absolutely no sense.
I concur with your estimate, Oyun said. But to be pedantically mathematical about it, I would say it makes a non-zero amount of sense, which, unfortunately, is still the most sense, given what we know. Admittedly, what we know is apparently also in the realm of approaching, but not quite, zero. Everyone seemed too stunned to process anything. But as far as Elith was concerned, if the impulse from Quell's shadow had been enough to erase Quell in an instant, then warping across the galaxy, as difficult as it was to accept, was not an unbelievable development. The important question was not whether, but why. Avamar meant nothing to her. There were so many settled worlds within the Ascendant's empire. It was almost impossible to know them all. Judging from the array's display, however, she noted that it was another fringe world, like Quell, far out on the galaxy's edge. Astronomically speaking, it was practically on the border of the Ascendant's governance. "What's special about Avamar?" she asked. "Apart from being our only friend out here?" Oyun said. "Not much. Relatively young in the Ascendant's family, I believe. Settled perhaps only 400 or 500 years ago. I could dig up the details if you like." Elith shook her head. "Grief," she said. "You ever been to Avamar?" He glanced at her. "Not that I know of." "How far?" Ames asked, his voice quiet and heavy. "I'm sorry?" Oyun said. "How far?" "To Avamar." Oyun checked the display and answered, 11.94 light seconds, approximately. Ames had been standing up to that point, but now he lowered himself into a chair, bent forward with his elbows on his knees, and dropped his head in his hands. "What is it, Captain?" Nieta asked. He didn't respond at first, just slowly ran the fingertips of both hands across his scalp, front to back, over and over, as though trying to soothe a pounding headache. "Captain Ames?" Elith said. He let his hands fall in front of him, clasped them, but didn't raise his head. "Calmaray has a range of 1/3 of a light second," he said. "Shuttle has a range of about 0.5 light second. No jump capability." He took a deep breath, sat up in the chair. "We're trapped here, with no way to call for help." Elith had been so focused on the puzzle of the planet that she hadn't yet thought about the implications for their team.
"If we've really moved," Nieta said, "I'm sure it won't take long for the Ascendants to locate us. It's a whole planet, after all." She looked to Oyun, clearly expecting him to agree. Instead, his mouth tightened.
"Arbiter," she said.
They will find us, yes," he said. "How long it will take is incalculable at this time."
"I don't understand. You picked it up when it appeared near Quell, didn't you?"
Yes, but many eyes had already been directed to Quell, for obvious reasons. And to be transparent, we don't know definitively how long it was there before we noticed it. My associates on Clariana did relay to me that the vessel experienced some anomalous feedback before Quell's destruction. It's possible that a similar event might draw their attention, I suppose, but the loss of another Ascendant's world seems a high price for the rescue of 6, and not one to hope for.
There has to be an emergency protocol, Nieta said. On the shuttle? A beacon or something?
Not one anyone will notice this far out, Ames said. He was keeping his cool, but the effort it took for him to do so was obvious.
It's a ship-to-shore hopper, not an escape pod. It wasn't designed for open space.
What about our comm array?
Linked to Clariana. All the long-range gear is on Clariana, Atarin, and Vanquin. I knew we should have kept the gunship.
You mean we have no way of contacting anyone? Nieta said, an accusatory tone creeping into her words.
This whole big Hezra task force had 0 contingency plan? How can that be?
Oh, I'm sorry, Advocate, Ames said, heat rising. Somehow, in all our planning, we made the mistake of expecting a planet to stay right where it was. Whoa, let's take it easy here, everybody, Varen said. There's no need to panic, and we certainly don't want to start eating our own.
Nieta had more to say, but she wisely chose to leave it unspoken.
I tried to tell you to keep the gunship, Arbiter, Ames said quietly, almost to himself, with more regret in his voice than accusation.
You did, Captain,
Oyun said.
It was my error to disagree. My view of the possibilities was much too narrow, I fear.
The group lapsed into silence, each perhaps sensing how close they were to tipping into a total meltdown.
On the bright side, Varen eventually said, Subo is taking this well.
Grief, Elith said, this isn't the time.
I humbly disagree, he replied. Optimism is precisely for this sort of time. It's not quite as useful when everything is going well, after all. And I would think, at the very least, our circumstances would cheer you up, in particular, Elith.
He left the comment dangling there, and she knew it was bait, but she took it anyway.
Do tell, O great master of all wisdom and insight, why that would be.
Well, because now we're all exiles.
It seemed a particularly flippant remark, ill-advised and maybe ill-purposed. But something about the way he'd set it up triggered a subtle signal in her spirit. On Quell, she'd learned how Varen often buried hints of something deeper in his lightest or most absurd comments. He was making some point, the first brick in a case he was building, though its meaning and significance escaped her for now. There was no doubt, though, that he would circle back to it later. She inhaled, hesitated before making any reply, allowed the words and the tone of his voice to imprint themselves on her mind, and then answered.
I liked you better as the silent one, she said.
He smiled at the jab, but thankfully didn't reply.
Despite our unfortunate lack of an escape plan, Oyun said, reasserting his authority, our objective hasn't changed. For the time being, we still have everything we need to continue our assignment here.
I don't see what good any of that does if the information dies with us, Ames said.
Yes, true, but best to work one problem at a time, Captain. One problem at a time. And our current priority is to discern what it is we need to know about this planet.
And once we do, Elith said, we might be able to solve the problem of the planet without needing to get off-world anyway.
How's that? Ames asked.
You have an advocate of the voice, she said, gesturing to Nieta, and a former one. Between the two of us, we'll find a way to kill it.
Kill it? Varen said. Shouldn't we at least figure out what it's doing before we decide what to do about it?
Yes, of course, we'll figure out what it's doing, Elith answered, and then we'll kill it.
Varen's face flickered with a brief expression, displeased or disappointed, but it quickly resolved. He nodded, then withdrew a few paces to a corner and leaned against the wall, acquiescing, at least for now.
Okay, then, Ames said, getting back to his feet. What's our first step?
He glanced between Oyun and Elith. To Elith's surprise, the Arbiter looked to her.
We find another place to look, she said.
Nieta and I pulled together some data, but it's not enough to give us the starting point we need.
Is that usual? Oyun asked.
Given the amount of ground we covered today, I would have expected to have more to work with. It's not necessarily unusual, but I wouldn't say it's common either.
Could be that its network got disrupted, Nieta added, with all the shifting the landscape seems to have done since the first team arrived.
Having some direction and concrete actions to take appeared to be bringing her back to form.
It'll be helpful to see how varied the flora is across regions, too, she continued. Better data, clearer picture of what to expect.
Probably shouldn't have any expectations about this place, Ames said. Seems to get us in trouble every time, and I really don't love the idea of getting too far outside the wire. Where do you suggest we start? Oyun asked, turning back to his workstation. He dismissed the display with the star chart and brought one of the others around, expanded it for them to see. A detailed terrain map of Quell's shadow, focused on their immediate surroundings. Orbital imaging from Clariana, overlaid with data from our drones. The features of the land were sharply defined over the majority of the area, but a few spots were fuzzier than their surroundings. Oyun anticipated the question before anyone asked it. The major discrepancy here is due to the appearance of the cliff. Our local data is good, but Clariana hadn't finished reimagining the location before we lost our connection. Elith crossed to him, examined the map. The incredible definition of the projection created a powerful sense of physicality, as though if she reached through the display, she'd be able to feel the texture of the terrain beneath her fingertips. Even the planetary intelligence provided by the First House's legendary Order of the Eye had never reached such a level of resolution. How much of the area is mapped to this level of detail? She asked. With a quick gesture from the Arbiter, the map retreated almost too fast to follow, as though the viewport was being launched into orbit, until the display showed Quell's shadow in its entirety, floating in space. Oyun gestured again, and the planet revolved lazily on the screen, completing a full rotation before coming to a stop. "Pick a spot," he said, nudging the floating display closer to her. Elith navigated and manipulated the display using the common gestures of interaction, and was astonished to see that no matter where she looked or how closely she zoomed in, the quality of the image never diminished. Oyun showed her how to tilt the view as well to get different perspectives on a location. The near limit appeared to be 20 or so feet above the surface, a range close enough for her to pick out small features that would serve as useful landmarks if she were on foot in the area. She spent a minute or two scrolling around the region, testing out the high-fidelity imaging. "Are you selecting a location?" the Arbiter eventually asked. "Or just playing with the map now?" "Some of each, I think," she said. "Our land nav instructors at the house never missed a chance to drill into us the difference between map and terrain. I'm not sure they'd be able to argue that quite as convincingly if I showed them this." "It is indeed a useful tool, generally speaking," Oyun said. "Though unfortunately, in our peculiar circumstances, I must admit there's no guarantee that what we see here is what we'll find in person. I wouldn't be quick to discard your training." Elith nodded, and now that she was fully comfortable with the map controls, re-centered the view over their camp to begin her survey in earnest. She closed her eyes for a moment, cleared her mind. During her service to the house, advocates of the Eye had provided her with target packages featuring detailed surface mapping to help her select her points of attack. Had she been on any normal mission, on any other planet, the range of options would have been wide. But here on Quell's shadow, she knew that every choice they made was critical, and any time they lost might lead to another unpredictable catastrophe. She couldn't just find a good location. She had to find the best location. And doing so required the perfect balance of conscious analysis and subconscious prompting, gut instinct supported by hard data. In that moment, she felt out of practice. When she opened her eyes, she pulled the map view out to a distance that looked most familiar, closest to the targeting data her sisters of the Eye used to provide. From there, she began a systematic sweep of the surrounding region, a grid-based survey spiraling outward from their base camp. Though she noted several promising areas, the moment the first roots of a mountain range appeared in the view,
The image sparked a sharp response in her body. She followed the terrain up to the range, and when the display crossed a specific peak, a pair of sensations passed through her like a chill wind. One was certainty, the other, dread. She spent a long minute staring at the image and its surrounding territory. It was as good a point of analysis as any she'd seen, but nothing about it stood out as an obvious trigger for her reaction. Nevertheless, whenever she returned to that peak, she felt drawn to it, called by it. Elith looked over her shoulder at Nieta and motioned for her to join them at the display. Nieta came along beside her, and Elith gave her a few moments to examine the map on her own. Karush stepped closer, watching from the side, unobtrusive but engaged. "What do you think, Nieta?" Elith asked. Nieta spent a couple of minutes scrolling around the area, and though she didn't seem to react to the mountain as Elith had, she continued to return to it as a centering point of reference in her search. The others remained in quiet expectancy while she worked. After a time, she straightened and nodded. "We have some good options there," she said. "I would agree. I think it's the right place to start." The range would have been a several-day journey on foot, but it was a short hop for the shuttle. Ames walked over to get a closer look. "Day trip?" he asked. "That would be the hope," Elith said, "but we should pack for longer, just in case." "How portable is your gear?" Ames asked Oyun. "That depends on how strong we all are," the arbiter answered with a quick smile. "I can certainly take the essentials, possibly a few nice-to-haves. The shuttle has some storage, of course, but we'll have to weigh trade-offs between equipment and personnel." "Drones?" Oyun shook his head. "Their control base station is too large." "I've got some dragonflies," Ames said. "Won't be much, but better than nothing. Indeed, any data we can collect could be useful. The craft does have a cabin off the main body and a small emergency medical bay as well. Those could give us a little extra capacity. If we're staying atmospheric, we can put some of the gear in a crate. Sling it on top," Ames offered. "Might fly a little sluggish, but it shouldn't be heavy enough to cause problems. Could probably toss Varen up there too, if you like." Elith glanced over to the corner of the station where Varen had been standing, anticipating his commentary. But Varen was no longer there. She hadn't heard him leave. "Wait, where did Varen go?" she asked. Karush went taut, snapped his head around to look at the corner where Varen apparently should have been. A moment later, his eyes went unfocused, as if lost in thought. After a few seconds, his shoulders relaxed and his eyes cleared.
"He's outside," Karush said, "sitting on the ground, near his quarters."
"Subo keeping an eye on him?" Ames asked. Karush gave a curt nod. And though his face hardened back into its usual expressionless mask, Elith could tell he was rebuking himself for having failed to notice Varen's quiet departure. And she wondered again about the nature of the connection between the Azurim and his machine, whether Subo had communicated to him in some unheard verbal exchange, or if Karush could somehow see what it saw.
"It would be unwise to divide our group," Karush said. "If we're relocating, we do so all together."
"Yeah, I'd agree with that," said Ames. "Safety in numbers or something." Oyun drew the display closer and bent nearer to examine the area Elith and Nieta had selected. After a brief survey, he straightened and nodded. "Very well," he said. "Everyone return to your quarters. Get what rest you can. We'll load at dawn." The order to rest caught Elith off guard. Everything seemed too urgent, time too short to allow for any downtime. The arbiter anticipated her response. His authoritative bearing rematerialized, and he held up his hand to halt her argument before it began. "That is an order," he said. "We've hardly stopped since we arrived, and we're in the range of sleep deprivation, where mistakes start slipping into the work of even the most hardened of operators. We cannot afford them."
Uyun scanned the faces of the others in the room, and then softened slightly. More grandfather than drill sergeant. And we've borne a great deal of change today, he continued. Give yourselves a moment or two, at least to attempt to process whatever your minds can handle. We'll all need them as clear as possible to tackle whatever tomorrow has in store. It took a moment for the full weight of his words to settle on Eleth. Had it only been one day? It could have been a week, and Eleth would have thought that time frame too short. But it had been around the same time the night before that she'd had her first talk with Oyun, and the cliff had appeared. Since then, they'd found the ship, lost Sardis and Quell, and traveled 24 light years across the galaxy. Any argument she thought she could make dissipated in the face of that realization. You're all dismissed. See you at daybreak. The others appeared to feel the same as Eleth, hesitant to be the first to leave, reluctant to allow themselves any recuperation with so much work to do and so many unknowns to contend with. But Ames took the lead, broke the ice.
Roger that, Arbiter, he said. I'll bunk with Varen. Karush, Subo can sleep by the door. Get you a moment to yourself.
That isn't necessary, Captain, Karush said.
I know it isn't.
But it's what we're going to do for tonight. At the very least, it'll give you a chance to hose out your armor.
The corner of Karush's mouth curled in an uncharacteristic display of amusement.
Ooh, that was almost a smile, Ames said. Now I know you're exhausted.
The Azurim bowed his head, touched his heart, and answered,
Thank you, Captain Ames.
Just here to serve, buddy. Same as the rest of us, Ames replied, then turned toward the exit, speaking over his shoulder as he went. All right, I'll admit it. I'm the weakest one here, so I'm going to bed. See you all soon enough.
I'll walk with you, Captain, Nieta said. He paused by the door, waiting for her to pass through, and then followed her out into the night. Karush looked to Eleth, offered her half a bow, and then turned and provided the same to the Arbiter.
Do not hesitate to call upon me, he said.
Sure, Oyun said. Rest well, Lion of the Aziri.
The Arbiter's words stunned Karush, his usually unreadable face momentarily revealing the emotion beneath. But he only bowed once more and then left, without further response. Oyun's eyes lingered on the door, as though he were still watching the Azirim as he walked away.
Wari Karush is the highest exemplar of the way of the Aziri I've ever met, he said, and then turned his attention to Eleth. He will question himself deeply in the face of what he has suffered today, but he must not be allowed to forget his true standing. No one could do more than he has done. I would appreciate your support in this.
She didn't know exactly what he meant for her to do, but she nodded.
Of course, she said. How about yourself, Arbiter? Care for a nap?
He smiled at her kindly.
In a bit, dear, in a bit. I have just one more thing I'd like to tie off.
Eleth stood regarding him for a moment, unable to fully reconcile the many dimensions of the man she had discovered. The sting of his confession from the night before remained, but had lost much of its power in light of his actions since then. She knew he was still the man who had recklessly pursued his research and development to near catastrophic ends. But she also saw the lengths to which he was going to correct his mistakes, and more, the authority he could project when he wished, and the goodness within it.
Don't ignore your own advice, she said. You said yourself you'd never ask someone to do something you weren't willing to first do yourself.
Ah, you are much too sharp for a man of my meager wit, he replied. Now I suppose I have to follow my own command.
She nodded and turned to go. Good night, Arbiter.
Actually, he said, before you go, could I prevail upon you to answer a question whose resolution has thus far remained beyond my grasp?
If there is such a question, I doubt it's within my ability to answer, she responded, turning back to face him. But if I can, yes. And then, after a quick thought, she added,
and if it does not violate any of the tenets to which I still hold. Of course, I'd expect neither more nor less of you.
Oyun paused a moment, formulating the question.
You, along with Nieda and Varen, sensed both, what shall we call them, energy discharge events, let's say, while the rest of us were oblivious to them. Could you help me understand the mechanism behind that?
Elith took a moment to roll the question over, to genuinely consider her response before speaking.
The simple answer, she said, is no. But my guess would be that it has something to do with the three of us having been steeped in the power of the deep language in a way that few have. There's a quality to it, to the way it folds and shapes the fabric of the universe. I'm afraid it can't be meaningfully described if you haven't experienced it, though you might know something like it if you've ever tried to explain your calculations to someone who lacks the necessary mathematical foundations.
Ah, he said. And only a few seconds later, the analogy helped him leap to a surprising level of understanding.
Ah, yes, I think I see. There are certain mathematical abstractions, structures, symmetries, that sort of thing. And when one truly grasps the properties of such a structure, one can begin to sense its presence there before the equations ever reveal it. Yet it remains hidden to those who only see the symbols. Something like that?
Yes. Elith said, that seems like a reasonable parallel.
Very good, that's helpful. So then would you agree or disagree if I were to suggest that this planet somehow makes use of the deep language, as you understand it?
I would, Elith began, and then hesitated while she weighed her answer.
Disagree, I believe, but only mildly.
He grunted at that.
Because you say, as you understand it, and I can't say that. There is a familiarity there, but also something off about it. Something that sounds wrong, I guess. Same language? With an accent?
Elith shook her head. More like different language, same root.
Perhaps two branches that share a far distant but common ancestor? I don't know if that makes any sense.
It's difficult to explain.
Indeed, phenomena outside any previously known experience often are. But the way that those of your house speak the deep language, I apologize for the crudeness of the analogy, but could it be understood as a manner of precisely describing the reality that you wish to manifest?
I suppose something like that.
Crudely speaking, she said.
And though she was hesitant to say more about the teaching of the first house, one more detail seemed both important enough to add and innocuous enough to reveal. Though certain phrases are much more compact and tied to certain linguistic patterns.
He said. For ease of use?
More for effectiveness.
Interesting. Very interesting. So sorry, last question. I promise. If the general concept is to describe a possible reality precisely, why would metaphor hold such power?
Elith had said nothing about metaphor, yet his description as such was shockingly accurate. The insight within the question served as a warning to her. The man's intellect and the quickness with which he could assimilate and integrate information clearly made it dangerous for her to say more. And though he seemed genuinely interested in nothing more than understanding the phenomenon within Quell's shadow, she suddenly wondered if he had merely camouflaged ill intent beneath his mask of benign curiosity and kindness.
I fear that is beyond my skill to answer, she said, bowing.
Ah, I see, Oyun said, apparently neither disappointed nor interested in pressing the point.
Well, thank you for the lesson. I must admit, at the moment, my mediocre brain has not yet grasped any of its relevance. But it may prove helpful at some point. One never knows what connections might one day appear between bits of otherwise seemingly useless trivia.
He touched her shoulder lightly in a gentle pat and added,
Please get some rest, Eleth. You look as though you've been carrying the whole galaxy by yourself, which would be a silly thing to do when you have so many others with whom to share the burden.
The Arbiter turned back to his workstation then, and drew up a second display covered with his indecipherable calculations. Eleth left quietly and returned to her living quarters, wondering just how much she had underestimated the man, and what tools she may have given him that might help him discern and deliver forbidden knowledge into the hands of the Hezra. Though the conversation had seemed benign enough, a dark train of thought began tumbling through her mind. By the time she reached her quarters, Nieta was already fast asleep, undoubtedly drained by the overwhelming events of the day. Eleth stood at the entrance for a time, watching her former sister and confidant. Nieta had claimed her continued loyalty to the First House, and the Hezra had treated her as though she were an outsider. But how much had she already revealed to the Arbiter before Eleth had come along? No one else had confirmed the truth of her claim, and Eleth had no way to verify it on her own, nor could she establish for herself that Ayun's calculation of the planet's new location was accurate, or even that the vanishing of Quell and changing of the sky wasn't part of some vast, simulated projection. The Clariana might have such capabilities, regardless of how difficult it was for her to imagine. Clearly the Hezra possessed technology beyond what she had known, and that which she did know was already enough to dwarf any doubt she might have about what was possible for the hierarchy now. The Ascendants had terraformed countless worlds, given what the Hezra had learned from Quell and potentially Varen during their long separation. It was no longer even a stretch for her to imagine that they themselves might now have the power to create one. And how far would the Hezra be willing to go to gain access to and willing cooperation from a woman who knew both the secret arts of the First House and the nature of Quell, the only world in history to withstand the full power of the Hezra's dreadful contingency? Once she'd opened that door in her mind, the simmering, background disquiet that she'd been carrying erupted into full-blown turmoil, with the thought that nothing was what it seemed, and that she was falling deeper and deeper into the multidimensional intrigues of the Hezra and the House. By the time morning came, she boarded the shuttle with the distinct feeling that she was surrounded not by allies, but by enemies of the most cunning kind.